Accession number 10165, reel number 10.
Martin McLean, reel 10. You were telling me how you became dissatisfied with the fire brigade.
Yes, the fire brigade was situated right in the centre of Carrick at the main roundabout. Well, crossroads then, it wasn't a roundabout. And the battalion used to have to, this first battalion used to have to march past the fire brigade up on the moors for training, and this is quite a regular affair. Sometimes you see the company going up, or the battalion going up, or many battalions going up. And I used to stand and watch my own particular battalion going past, and the lads would yell at me, "Harry Martin, how are you getting on with this?" And I'd stand there in my uniform, and jesting and joking as they passed. And my heart was really longing to be with them, because my life was army. I was a soldier, and I didn't want to be a fireman. I didn't want an enclosed job such as I had. I wanted to be out in the moors, playing as soldiers with the lads. And then later on, when the lads weren't going up on training, I used to see them going up with their picks and shovels up onto Fishpond Wood, where the whole battalion was sent up day after day to make roadways. And that was part of part of the jobs that they give the battalions for to fill up their winter trainings, and that was making roads across moors. They supply some lorries, RSC lorries, they had some mechanisation now, and they'd bring stones, and the men would dig where the engineers told us to dig, put the stones in, cover them up, and make roadways across the moor. Well, I got sick of seeing all these lads going past. We used to do trial runs with the fire brigade, fleeing around Catrick and its areas, hanging onto the handrail and on the footboard of the fire engine with our polished steel helmets on. And I decided I was going to get out of it. I used to go back to the battalion on recall for to play rugby for them. And I used to meet me mates for a few moments, then back to this place again, where there were men from all different regiments of the army. We used to get on all right. There was no argument or quarrelling. But it was a lazy life, laying on bed after you'd done your morning training, or polishing of the fire engine, or the little jobs you had to do, laying around, sitting around, reading books, doing anything, but you couldn't leave the station, go for a walk, etc., because they had only two crews. One was reserve and one was standby. The standby, particularly in the summer, was in case of moor fires. You were sent off to try to quell the moors when they caught fire before it got too bad, where battalions used to have to be called out to do firefighting. And so I decided I'd write to the company commander and ask for an interview for a return to duty, because although I was attached to this fire brigade, there was only a sergeant of the Army Ordnance Corps in charge, and he had no say on the movements of the likes of us. We were posted there, and so any further movement away from there had to be done through your own battalion. I made application to the commanding officer, the company commander, in writing, for to be returned to duty. You have to give a reason for leaving this job, because it was a plum garrison job. And so I told him that I wished to go and further me intention to go in for a promotion. So I went before the company commander, and I was duly moved back to the battalion. And to my delight, that was just what we wanted. And at this time of moving back to the battalion, they were doing special training on guards and sentries drill. I don't know why this fad went on, but they decided to do a lot of guards and sentries drill on the barracks square. And it wasn't just guards and sentries. It was some newfangled to us. We, as young recruits, had been taught guards and sentries drill, how to march up and down your beat in a smart and soldier-like manner, to stand to the guard at a valid retreat and tattoo, to the orderly officer and captain of the week once by day and once by night, to the commanding officer and brigade commander once during the guards' tour of duty in case of fire or any unusual occurrences. These are things that I remember from my days of soldiering. And they used to drill this into you, and you used to march up and down your beat, 12 paces out, 12 paces back, and turn about in special ways, carrying a rifle at a slope, which is contrary to the light infantry today. We always marched on sentry duty at the slope with our bayonets on. We'd done this practice on the square of double sentries, because the rumour was around that we were going to move down to Blackdown Camp in Surrey, which meant we may be called upon to do palace guard. And the more efficient a battalion was at this sort of drill, the more likelihood of them being selected for a palace guard. So we've done quite a lot of this guards and sentries drill and double sentries. Double sentries is you just split the company up, one half marches one way and marches back the other way, and then you go through all the drills of calling the guard out, standing to, and all this. But it was very interesting. I thought it was good. And then from there, we went on to all our ordinary army training, and I was back in the barrack room with 10 platoon. And from there, I was now enjoying army life again in full, cross-country runs, rugby, and when we weren't doing any training of any sort, we were always outside wrestling one another, us out for bits of runs, or on the sports field playing football or rugby or anything we want in our own time, just a few lads, or taking the shot put and trying to put the shot or throwing a javelin. Some of us weren't have any good at it because I didn't have a long enough arm for that game. But anyway, we used to persevere at trying to it because during our army training, once a year, everybody had to pass what was called a physical efficiency test. They had to run 100 yards at a certain time, and if you didn't do it, they made you run over and over and over again until you did do it, or they failed you, because part of the physical efficiency was part of the training for to get you an increase in your pay, like efficiency allowance. And then it sent you off on a mile run. You had to do the mile run in a certain time, which actually was no bother to me, but some of the people used to struggle at it, people who didn't keep fit. And then we'd have to go on long jumps, weight putting and shot putting, how much the same, throwing a javelin, and all sorts of little things like this to show that you are efficient physically as a soldier. Everyone had to go through this. And so we got plenty of training in this in our own time. Once you were trained as a soldier, you had plenty of spare time because the morning was invariably spent in training, or if you're a junior NCO, which I became very short while afterwards, yeah, I used to see all these young men going off to doing sand mud lectures, and I didn't know what this was about. But anyway, orders came up, Martin McLean was promoted to Lance Corporal. I was the biggest man in the army them days, Lance Corporal stripe, my arms, marksman's badges up, a rifle and Lewis gun. We used to wear them on our sleeves, and you had your stripes up above, and so you had your skillet arm badges, they called them, with a green backing on that I've already explained, and the same with the cross rifles and your stripes. And when you walked along the street, you were so proud you could hardly move your arms from his pride. And this is fact. We used to always kid each other, but it did used to happen. You got so proud you could, you know, everybody had to see your stripes. One stripe, but everybody had to see it.
What were your duties as Lance Corporal? What did that entail?
There was no change in my duties other than I was now in the same barrack room, but they gave me a section of men, maybe 10 or 12 men who I was in charge of mainly on training on the moors, on battalion exercise, any sort of exercise. They were my special section I used to give the orders to, arrowhead, pebble formation, dig in here, do this, do that, in accordance to army training. And it was interesting.
Did your relationship with the men change at all as Lance Corporal? Would you still be on first name terms?
No, that was one thing you had to stamp on in the army. There's no such thing as first name terms. You are now Lance Corporal. And even if it was a slipshod, somebody slipped and said, Martin, in the barrack room, and the sergeant heard it, or a senior corporal heard it, they'd jump on you. As if you went out in the barrack lanes and somebody called Martin and the company commander or the company sergeant major there, you're in trouble. You had to enforce among the men that you had to be called Lance Corporal. But with their training, it didn't need much enforcing because it was part of their broader policies. They always addressed a sergeant, corporal, and sergeant majors by their respective ranks. And once I saw the stripes in your arm, you were Lance Corporal. When I first got made up, they were all kidneys, but I enjoyed it because of all my pals. But there was no friction, whatever. They accepted me, and I just became a section commander in 10th Platoon.
Did you have any, besides taking training being involved in the actual giving instructions of the training, did you have any sort of pastoral responsibility to the men in your section? In other words, if they had any problems, would they come to you first, or would they miss you out in that sort of thing?
Them things were never thought of, them dears. A man's troubles or worries. A man just had to get on with it. There was no such thing as welfare or such anyone consoling a man if he was in trouble or family trouble. He just had to get on with it. And that's why you used to see so many men turn moody, because maybe they had some domestic trouble. Maybe they were thinking anything could happen. But there was no such thing as a man having somewhere to go for to explain his feelings of that nature. He just had to get on with it in them days. Part of my duty as a Lance Corporal was now to disappear into the company office and take part in these model lectures, which were quite a mystery to me. And we had a company commander now called Major Percy. And he used to take us on sand model lectures, which amounted to, it was a layout of an area of land, a battlefront, you could say, or a piece of country. And he would then explain how he used to take advantage of cover, dig in, taking advantage of cover so you could move up quickly and quite efficiently with your section along cover, keeping under cover, away from the sight of the enemy so they don't shoot you up, and take a position to give fire, and then go on all through simple sections in attack, sections in defence. And we learned quite a lot from this, because up to then we'd been shown our rifles, been taught we'd been on Ramuas with the Lance Corporals, we'd learned a little bit, but this with Major Piercy instilled in us that the Lance Corporal just wasn't a man carrying stripes on his arm. He had a great responsibility as regarding looking after the safety of his men in the event of having to go to war. And so we learned a great deal from Major Percy. Later on, it was getting on to an August bank holiday time, and I told you before that I had a poor home life, and all the battalion was going on leave. Well, at this time, the battalion had gone up to Bellaby Rangers to fire their annual course, which meant that, once again, we're qualifying to be marksmen and qualifying with our weapons, you could say. The rifle, the Bren gun, not the Bren gun, the Lewis gun, and grenades, and in some cases, the revolver. The revolver them days was a great big 45, that's what they used to call it, Colt revolver. Great big, massive thing.
You wouldn't have one of those as a Lance Corporal?
No. The people who used to have these were officers, and the number one and two of the Vickers machine gun. We had one machine gun battalion in the battalion, and these lads had them. Anyway, everybody had to be shown how to fire them. And it was remarkable, I turned out, when I had my few shots, to be a good shot with a pistol. Don't ask me how, maybe I'd read too many cowboy stories. But I turned out to be a good shot, and I was sent over to the among the officers who were practicing with their pistols for a battalion shooting team. And it turned out that I went on the battalion shooting team as a revolver, or we used to call them pistols, member of the team. At this place, we were qualifying, and there was, right throughout the battalion, we used to have what we call a champion company competition going on. And that was drill for turnout, for everything that you could mention. A battalion was assessed on even sport down to a fine art. Rugby, cricket, football. It was like a league of football teams, and the best company in the battalion was chosen as the CO's company, where they had to march down. Special honours was to march up the officers' mess before everybody else went and prayed, to escort the regimental colours down from the officers' mess, that's where they were kept, and carry them onto the regimental ceremonial parades, or any time that the battalion had to turn out for this sort of thing. And then at the end of the parade, march them back to the officers' mess and march back to our own units. But anyway, for all this, we used to be very keen at competing just to beat another company. We had a Sergeant Major Bush, who was also in the rugby team, and he got transferred from my C company to headquarter company. And we had to go and play rugby, which was the final game to decide if Headquarter Company was Champion Company or C Company. And Sergeant Major Bush was a very fast man, a good man, and having played for us in the first instance, we claimed him back to play for us against his now new company at rugby. And we beat Headquarter Company, which made us the Champion Company. Whilst we were at Bellaby, it was announced that the Champion Company would receive 3 extra days leave. And as soon as we got back to the barracks, passes would be ready and people could get away as soon as possible. Now, Bellaby Rangers must have been about 10 or 12 or many more miles away from our Mons lines. And as I mentioned previously, everywhere the army went them days, we marched. Now, we were so keen to get back, to get away, to get our kits handed in, to get cleaned up and get away on leave, that the company set off at a light infantry pace. And it's the only time that I knew a battalion to keep up a pace, a fast pace, right back to barracks. And they marched very fast, singing and jostling and skylarking, keeping in our fours, by the way. By jostling, I mean, it was just bumping into one another, but we kept in formation as we marched, with the company commander at the head, and each platoon in its own little platoon group, racing back to Mons lines. The men were all rushed off on leave, but I told you before that I had a poor home life, so I decided I wasn't going to go on holiday, because the home where I lived was a bit overcrowded, and now there are spick and span, there was no place for us to live. So I stayed back in camp, and the whole battalion eventually went on its leave, and I was left behind as battalion orderly corporal. Now, this is one of the jobs that the lance corporal got. In a battalion, you had the captain of the week, the battalion orderly officer, the orderly sergeant, which was called the battalion orderly sergeant, and the battalion orderly corporal. Our jobs were varied. My particular job was to answer all calls of the people wanting to go sick, marching the sick people down to the sick bay for their inspection, collecting the sick reports and handing them back to companies, and all the sort of paraphernalia that went on, and also when the regimental orders was put out by the order room, the sound for the battalion orderly corporal. We had a special bugle call, same with the BOC orderly sergeants and everything. Everything was worked by bugles, not telephones them days, no wirelesses. A bugle call would sound out, battalion orderly corporal, and off would go. And sometimes they'd get the battalion orderly corporal at the double, and it would be the battalion orderly corporal bugle call, and at the end they'd put a few notes on the end to indicate that you had to go up the order room at the double you wanted hurriedly. Maybe a man had taken and had to go to hospital, and sorts of things like that. But anyway, the battalion went off on leave, and I found that I'm a battalion orderly corporal and company orderly corporal, because in a battalion you always had people who were on defaulters and who had no homes to go to, who stayed back, and they were called rear details that stayed behind and were put in one barrack room in each company. See, in our company we had maybe 6 barrack rooms and company stores to save light and fuel and other things of that nature, I have no doubt, or maybe for control. All the people that were staying behind in that particular company were put in one barrack room. The sergeant, the BOS at the time working with me, was a fellow called Sergeant Small, who, funny enough to say, eventually committed suicide. Why, we don't know, but he had a large family. And he said to me, Corporal, he says, I won't be down for staff parade, which meant that every night the BOC and the BOS assembled the battalion staff parade. The battalion staff parade was an assembly of all battalion order sergeants, defaulters, and other such people as that, and they'd report their companies. So there'd be a half an hour after a rally, that would be to ensure that there was no absentees, and absentee reports had to be tendered by the battalion order sergeants, and the report also how many men had to go sick, and they'd hand the sick reports over to the battalion order corporal, that was me, who would eventually parade the men and take them away off on the sick, on the bugle sounding the sick call. They would pray on the square, and this was quite a ritual in itself. And let's stick on the staff parade thing. And later on at night, the battalion orderly sergeant would be on the parade ground with the battalion orderly corporal. And at 9:30, tattoo would sound, and the battalion orderly corporals would go round, not battalion orderly corporals, the company orderly sergeants would go round and make the men stand to the beds. That meant he'd go into a barroom and shout, "Stand by your beds," and everybody spring to attention, stand by the beds, and he'd check the bed spaces to ensure that everyone was in. And where there's an absent bed space, they'd want to know where the man was. If he's a trained soldier, he was allowed to go out till midnight. So he'd check up and see if the man had marked out in the guard room. Everything was done so that every man could be accounted for at any time. So if a soldier went out down, say, to Darlington or down to Catterick Village or to Richmond, he had to report to the guard room and be signed out by the guard or the police on duty to state that he was out of barracks. So the orderly sergeant would collect a roll of the battalion, of his company, and report present or otherwise to the battalion orderly sergeant. Well, during the time that the battalion was away on holiday, away on leave, I was left behind as battalion orderly corporal, and Sergeant Small told me to take the staff parade as he wouldn't be down. Now, he was more used with all this than me. He knew there'd be no officialdom about it. It was just a matter of a formality. So just before staff parade, a lad came to me called Gil. I remember these names so vividly because I was involved in a sort of way. He came in the evening, and he was all spick and span. You could see this man had been to Glasshouse, because when they'd been to Glasshouse, they scrubbed their equipment. All brasses used to gleam, but their equipment was white. They scrubbed all the blanco off. The boots were absolutely shining. The heel plates of the boots at the sides were all burnished and shining. And in other words, the man used to jump to attention at the least little thing, because he'd been through a course of punishment at Glasshouse and Aldershot, which meant they went through a very, very severe punishment course. And to me, it was a shame that they ever abandoned this idea of Glasshouse. The do-gooders had to stop. But when a man done wrong in the army, a serious wrong, he was sent to Glasshouse and punished, and he never wanted to go back there again. Anyway, this lad came down the line with his kid bag. He belonged to our company, and reported to me that he was back from Glasshouse. And I went and got him some bedding and put him in the spare barrack room. And just shortly after this, I saw three people coming down the company lines, or two people, I can't remember, on bicycles, civilians. And who should it be but my three brothers? Two or three brothers. I can't exactly remember, but I think there was three of them. Could be two. And they'd come from home in Newcastle on bicycles to see me. You know, they couldn't understand why I hadn't come home to them, so they'd come to me. And I was a bit of a stew what to do with them, because I'd never met up with this before. And I'm standing in front of them with me, smart as a button stick, box crease trousers on, put his polished boots, belt and sidearms on. Belt and sidearms means it was an indication that you are the BOC of the day. You had to wear a belt with your bayonet on, a polished bayonet. And we all looked very smart as we dressed up for this. And so we questioned them, and had a long talk with them, being brothers, you know. And they said they were too tired to go back home. So I couldn't get out of camp to try to get them to Sandy's home. So I got them some bedding and put them in this spare barrack room. And they were very happy there. I took them down to Cuckoo's and got them fed. All against regulations and rules, by the way. But these things, the army would turn a blind eye to, because, well, my kin, they wouldn't mind it. But against real army regulations, no one was allowed to sleep in barracks. But anyway, I got these brothers of mine settled in. And then I had to go off on the staff parade. And this man, Gil, had to report on the staff parade. Any man who came from Glasshouse had to be on the staff parade or default a call. Every time the bugle sounded, the default a call or staff parade, he had to be there. To ensure, because he was still undergoing punishment on his last day, by the way. When he came back to battalion, it was his last day of punishment. So therefore, he had to be on the staff parade with the remainder of the defaulters to indicate that he was on punishment stations. And when I called the roll, this Gill was missing. And so went around the ballot rooms looking for him. Couldn't find him. He'd done a bunk. He'd gone off. He'd deserted. He'd just done 28 days in the glasshouse in Aldershot, and I thought it would be enough for him. But we have no control of him. The man is now in the open barracks. He's done his punishment. All he has to do is attend staff parade, and then he's back in the normal run of the duties with the battalion. But he wasn't there. So, unknowns to me, there had been friction in the barrack room where two of the lads who were in the barrack room, one was called Bainbridge and one was Norton. Both professional boxers, both hard cases. I think Bainbridge, I knew him very well, and him and I were good pals. I think he was more swayed into the naughty ways of life by Norton and the brusque ways of life, because I could get on with this Bainbridge very well, and he was a well-known boxer in Newcastle. But when they join the army, they revoke all professional rights and become amateur boxers. Well, these two had been provoking a man called Brady, in a barrack room. Now, this man, Brady, was a very old soldier, had many stripes, good conduct stripes, on the bottom of his arm, a grey-haired old Irishman who had been in the DLI for many, many years. Well, if they have four long service stripes up, which he had, it meant they had at least 16 years as a private or a lance corporal. And they had been provoking him for some reason or other. And I went in the barrack room after staff parade, and it was such a commotion. My brothers were huddled in a corner. These two, the Norton and the Bainbridge, were crawling under the beds, screaming and yelling, blood coming from them right, left and centre, squirting blood. I must mean that. And this old man, Lindsay, he'd been provoked so much by them, and he was a real old soldier. They knew all the old methods of fighting, because pre my days, the army was very rough. It was still rough then. I already explained about the bed that came in at two parts. Well, and I also explained that you could take a bed leg off by kicking like a cotter pin, which released the bed leg off. And he had come in from the canteen where he'd had a pint or two, and he was going to stand no more nonsense from this Bainbridge and Norton. And he got a hold of the bed leg and wrapped it a towel around his hand and tied the bed leg in his hand. Now, I never knew this, but this was quite a common thing in the old days. When a man was fighting with a sword, he tied the sword to his hand, because with a sudden blow, he can lose it. You read it in the cavalry charges, they tied the sword to a hand. Well, he must have been involved with things like this before, because he tied the bed leg to his hand. And at one end of the bed leg was the roller, which, like a little wheel on the bottom, which you could roll the beds in and out when they used to fold into one another. And they start provoking him, and he had this thing wrapped, hidden under his blankets, and he went at them with his bed leggy. Well, it was such a commotion. Fortunately, the old man, Brady, they observe regulations, in as much as a lance corporal, a young lance corporal such as me, goes up and stop him, because he was creating havoc with these other two who was under the beds and yelling and shouting for help. So I got this Brady pacified, and I took the bed leg off him, and I said, well, I've got no option, Brady, you're in the guard room. And then I put him in the guard room, and I had to get an escort to take them up, and then when I come back, I had to take the other two to the first aid room to be repaired. And then they were put in the guard room also. So all of them are put in the guard room in different cells for their own protection, as you could see it, overnight, until the thing was sorted out by much higher authority than me. Well, my brothers were speechless about this. They thought, if this is the army, you want to get out, Martin. But this was really a lone incident. So in the one time there, I had this man, Gill, who went absent. And then I had this fight of three others in the barrack room, and the blood squirting all over the shop, and which I had to sort out, which I sorted out all right and dealt with. Norton and Bainbridge eventually went before the command officer and got severely punished for their troubles. They got some detention, and this man Brady was given a good caution, because the command officer realised the man was provoked. The other man called Gill, he was roped in. Roped in means he was caught by the military police, it was the military police, but the Red Caps, we used to call them, the men who were the Red Caps, indicating they were the Royal Military Police Corps. They picked him up in Darlington, apparently, because he didn't have any civilians, and they could see by his stance and his cut that he had been to Glasshouse. So they brought him back and he was put in the guard room at Mons Lanes. He eventually came before the commanding officer to explain his reason for absence. And at the same time, all the witnesses going with this man as evidence against him for the misdemeanour he'd done. And there was two or three other corporals involved with it.